This is the Financial Coconut Podcast, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut, and every Tuesday you will be joining me on my personal segment, First Dibs, where I bring you through some of the latest, most interesting ideas in the personal finance space, hoping you inch closer to the life you love while managing your finances well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, coconuts, welcome back. You know, actually, non-Muslim can also participate in Islamic finance. It's just a more ethical way of looking at things. So today we are going to continue this discussion to focus on three big pointers, right? Three big things out there on, like, is this actually halal, right? So once again, we're going to continue our discussion with Raj, our resident expert, and Taisha, our resident co-host. Woo-hoo. So resident. Welcome back.
I got... permanent resident.
Fast queue. Good morning, everyone. I welcome you to another day with the Financial Coconut. In our podcast, Berbangking Financial Myths, discovering best financial practices and discussing financial strategies that fits our unique life. You get it. Ultimately empowering us to create a life we love while managing our finances well. So today, we're going to answer three big questions. Is this halal? And we're back with Raj.
Hello, everybody. I'm so happy and I thank you for inviting me. My name is Raj Mohammed and I'm in this Islamic finance and consulting business under the name of Five Pillars. All right.
Why Five Pillars?
Five Pillars is a very common term that Muslims are aware. It is the Five Pillars of Islam.
I feel so unaware.
I mean, he's about to make you aware, girl. Yes, so come, listen up.
Yes, come. Now, every Muslim has got these five pillars. The first one is a pronouncement of being a Muslim and accepting the prophet, the messenger as our prophet.
And then
God as the sole omnipotent, if I can say. Right? And believing in heaven and hell. And second one is we've got five-time prayers. So we've got the prayers. We've got the fasting that you may be, and if it's no Hari Raya Puasa, and that is it for 1 month, we are fasting. And then every Muslim has to give a very small percentage of their net income for annually towards alms or charity, right? We call it zakat. And then finally, only those who can afford to and who are capable, right? Like they're not ill, to make a pilgrimage to the Mecca. So these are the five pillars of Islam. So I thought that would be quite a nice name and I think the logo also look okay.
Yeah, really cool. And Tasha Khan in the house.
Hey, everyone. It's me.
Yeah, so for all of you that... Yeah, who are you, right? Like for all the people tuning in.
Okay, yes. Hi, I'm Taisha. I am Reginald's friend from junior college. I'm an actor.
Actually, nobody knows I'm Reginald, you know? Everybody just call... I say like, I'm Reggie.
I don't know what y'all think Reggie is short for.
Whatever, yeah. Okay, life moves on. Yes, yes. No, it's okay. Continue.
Okay, so I'm an actor, a writer. I am a creative... I'm interested in a lot of things and I've always wanted to co-host a podcast, so I'm very happy to be here. Yes.
Do you have a plug, like your latest show or something?
No, just Google me. Follow me on Instagram. Mm. I post a lot of stupid things.
So we are back today as an extension of our Chills episode to talk about three points, right? Like I always like to talk about three points in our Tuesday segment. And today we are going to run through... Is this halal? You know, but this sounds like a game show, right?
Is this halal?
So we're gonna do this because I think there's a lot of different products out there today, and there's a lot of misconceptions sometimes, and there are a lot of things that I think we can answer in this format, right? So before we begin, is anybody has anything you want to add before the game starts? Is this halal?
No, I think I'm all raring to go.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do this. Yeah, do I'm this. Ready to play. Is this halal?
Yeah, maybe this could become a visual thing, right? Yeah. But yes. So I think on that background and on that basis, I think we go on the first point, right? Which is the first question and the first point that I really wanted to ask. You know, is taking a mortgage to buy a house halal?
Well, the question is context, right? Yes. So you need to know. So is taking a mortgage halal? So the straightforward answer is if you take a conventional interest-based mortgage, on paper it's not. Whereas if you take an Islamic mortgage, it is. So that's what, right? But the question then is there an Islamic mortgage services available where you are? If it is available, then there are moral obligation, not legal obligation, for one to look into it and then try and subscribe to it.
Clarification, is all Islamic finance a moral obligation on some level?
Yes, absolutely correct. All Islamic finance are simply a moral obligation for Muslims. What else is an economic and a financial obligation for non-Muslims?
Right? Ethical consideration.
Ethical consideration. Yes, excellent. Yes, yes. So, so in a similar way, it's not just... I mean, your question is taking a mortgage loan halal or permissible, right? I think the question is more centered on the fact that is taking a conventional interest-based mortgage loan halal. I guess that's what it is. So... interest, or rather conventional interest elements, have always been frowned upon by Muslims. Mm. All right. So in Singapore, having a roof over your head is essential. So we have to try and look
I think
for,
everywhere having
yeah, I was
a
about
roof
to say
is
that.
Essential.
I think it's essential to have a roof.
Yes, yeah, absolutely right, right? Yeah. Thank you very much for repeating that.
But it's more like a social context, right? Everyone wants that.
Everyone wants a home
wants
and over your head,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
If somebody says that just because there is no Islamic mortgage, does that mean that you can't take any mortgage loan at all? Or should I go on to a rental, etc.? So Islamic finance is centered around anything that is interest-based, and it advocates, encourages, compels you to look for Islamic solution, not just for mortgage, but for any loan for that matter, be it your, you know, a business loan or renovation loan or mortgage loan. And it also on, so one is this wanting capital, one is also placing capital, so on your investment side. So would you put into a conventional fixed deposit versus an Islamic fixed deposit? So we always would want to try and look for Islamic product, whether it's available where you are, and advocates you to take it. Right, there are other considerations too. What happens if for some reason the Islamic mortgage loan is far more expensive than the conventional one? How do you make that decision? Because your capability to service the loan, right, does it becomes very difficult. So any consumer would have several deciding factors before it decides to go Islamic or otherwise.
And I think I'm coming from the ground that because HDB, you know, which is everybody you should know, right? HDB, correct. You know.
Housing Development Board.
Yes. So HDB actually has a loan, you know, that goes at about 2.6%, you know, or 0.1% above OA. So if OA changes, you know, things change, right? So it's pegged to your CPF interest rates. But what happens with HDB loans is you can take up to 90%. Right. Whereas all other bank loans, you take up to 75%. That means your down payment size is a lot bigger.
Correct.
And HDB loan is not halal.
Exactly.
Right. So how does that work?
Basically, if you look at history, it is the usurious practices that has been condemned. And usurious practices, and by definition, is charging excessive money on money. So that's what we don't want to, because if you allow that to happen, and then we know the devastating consequences it has. Now, what you're doing here is to purchase a home to bring up your family. And here you have an avenue that you can have a loan and able to service it. And it happens. HDB is a government entity, an agency, and its job is not to service Muslims alone. It has been developed and it has got, certain schemes that would try and make every Singaporean own a home. So there are camps out there that permit it, and there are camps out there who are vehemently against it, right?
You mean
so
like taking HDB loan?
Taking HDB
it's not,
loan.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. But the reality is, One is 90% loan, you know, which you only need to pay 10% down payment. Exactly. The other one, which is the banking loan out there for mortgage, this is like mandate, right? Legal mandate, is 75% only.
Exactly. There's
so much. Can you even compare it this way?
Yeah. Islamic finance allows one to subscribe to conventional solutions in the absence of an Islamic. So if you realize HDB has been around since Singapore, right? So it has been giving this scheme for all this while. So what has happened here is that there are interest groups that wants to continue this conversation. If I may quote, the Member of Parliament, Zulkarnain, has recently brought it up in the Parliament as one of his questions to try and explore offering Islamic HDB equivalent. And I think that is a very healthy sign. There are conversations that are happening. And there are people who are having the conversations. And we are glad that that conversation has already commenced. Nice. So you need the right time to introduce different schemes. And I think now is the right time to talk about it too. And I'm sure we'll find a solution that is compatible and would be acceptable by all.
I think, okay, firstly, I had no idea that there were people who were opposed to taking like a mortgage because they don't think that it's halal. Okay, so my question was that you said that the HDB loan is not halal. Mm. I am not sure that that's true. Is that true?
Look, what makes it non-halal? Two things, right? A, the contract has the word interest.
Okay.
That's what it says. We are now charging you X interest amount. Secondly, absence of any halal language in there or Sharia language in there. So that makes it non-halal.
I mean, I would say that halal doesn't have to be, you know, a certain language, or it is a practice, right? So let's say if the interest rate isn't usurious, then why should we consider it not halal?
There are two, three components into it, right? You got to look at it in the context of the financial transaction or the contract. So if I don't get it from HDB, I'm going to get it from a bank, right? So the party that I'm indebted to is now a financial institution instead of HDB. What makes a product halal? Everyone will ask you for a certification. Every Islamic product, they'll ask for certification. Mm. Who calls it halal? There isn't one for the HDB. So we cannot explicitly call it as Sharia compliant or halal. Mm. But
that is just in the language,
the
right?
Language.
In
the essence of it. I think it looks to be because the prices are not...
I like that.
Yeah, I think because, you know, it's not usurious, it is fair, you know. You know, if you look at it, what would HDB do in the event you cannot default? It has an obligation because, you know, in the event that you cannot pay, it's not like they have let you stay there for free, right? I mean, they have a certain responsibility. However, I think they will not throw you out the day there's a defaulter. So there will be discussion and there will be a lot of negotiation to try and get you some form of accommodation, a delay in repayment, a restructuring in the repayment. Mm. So that kind of thing would happen.
Yeah. HDB does a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think my question is a bit more like, okay, if we look at food, sorry, a lot of my reference for halal is food.
So, same for mine.
So let's say something is not halal certified. It doesn't mean it's not halal, right?
Absolutely.
So I mean water... You don't need it to be halal certified because it's water. It doesn't need to be slaughtered properly unless for some reason the water is tainted with alcohol, which makes it not water. Yeah, so my question is that for that financial product, just because it's not Islamic finance doesn't mean it's not halal finance.
Very simple. You know, you walk into Starbucks to have your coffee, right? No halal sign there. Mm. But you still find Muslims walking in there and having the drink. So do we now call it halal to drink it, or we find all elements of non-halal is present there, right? Yeah. Because they don't serve pork there, they only serve cakes and savouries and coffee, so we are comfortable eating there. But look at the flip side of it, of would you go and eat into a place that says no pork, no lard? No Muslim would. Or a Muslim would go and eat there, but they may probably eat fish and vegetables and etc. Mm-hmm. Right? But nobody will eat the chicken there because the chicken... you know, has to be slaughtered in a certain way. Mm. But let me also tell you something interesting. The chicken, all right, Muslims can eat a kosher meat, right? So you know it's a kosher, right? The Jews has a certain way of doing it. And then Muslims can eat that kosher meat. Mm. So it's not in the pronouncement of some Arabic phrases that makes it halal.
So it's a methodology. There. We're going there. Right? So what about coconut? Okay, but the thing is, I think Raj is broadly aligned with you, right? Mm. But it's more of a bringing up this point.
Yes.
Yeah, I think for me it was just differentiating the idea of Islamic finance and whether it's halal. Because I would personally say if Starbucks only serves coffee, I mean, okay, let's ignore Starbucks may not be the best example because they do have non-halal meat there. I mean, we don't know if it is.
Actually,
or not.
I kind of asked them. Mm. They said that they. Well, I may be wrong, right? But I did check. They say they get from a halal meat producer, supplier. And they don't want to have it as a policy in the country in the company not to favor or show any emblems as favoring any particular community. Mm. So, but that's their policy, right?
Yeah, but
you see, there's this word called waswas in every Muslim, and that is. You know, are you comfortable?
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Are you comfortable doing this thing? And so it did, like I said, she could go and eat in a place that I'm not comfortable and vice versa because we are only answerable to our creator.
Yeah.
So Muiz doesn't come after me. No Islamic police come after me. Unlike, I think, Malaysia, right? If you don't fast, they would come and catch you or something. catch a Muslim.
I can't speak on this.
Yeah, but apparently there has been some of the countries there are religious police.
Not in
Singapore.
But I think the question leads towards what will you tell our audience? Let's say some people are listening in and they may struggle with putting 25% down payment, right? Just to get an Islamic loan.
Correct.
But
correct.
They could jolly well fit 10% correct. Down payment. Correct. How would you speak to these people?
It is a responsibility. What I say is not a fatwa, right? Mm. So we would say that the loan given by HDB are very favorable financially. So if
TFC approved. I broadly agree. Right? Yes.
So we still got a certifying board.
We're gonna have our own logo, right? And put on the financial product, right? Retail friendly products.
Exactly. So as I say, you know, HDB has got certain terms and certain contractual obligations that may be friendly. But if you as a Muslim are very adamant and want to, you know, keep to the book and insist, then I think it is your rights to refuse it, right? But at the end of the day, it's all about how do you spend that finite resources, which is your financials. If you are able to meet the obligations comfortably and may not be able to do so if you go for an alternative solution, then it gives you that you've got to rethink. But having said that, we do understand. See, Muslims are minorities and we do understand and we want to address it. And that's why I say the conversations have started.
I think because you mentioned that there's three things to Islamic finance, I think generally also in Islam, harm to yourself, harm to others, community, and also harm to the environment. So if it's harmful to yourself, in the sense that if you don't take the HDB loan, you are harming yourself because you are unable to provide for yourself.
Yeah, it's a statement somebody has to make. You may or you may not. Because you may not be harmful, but you may save a lot. That's not harming, right? So let's say I can comfortably service an Islamic bank loan rate that's higher. So I can comfortably save. But if I were to take the HDB, it's not a question of harming or otherwise, right? So I'm going to pay less. By paying less, my disposable financials are more. By disposable financials are more, then I'm going to spend that resources more, you know, in a humanly way or in a much more socially responsible way. So the harmful must be used, you know, in a very careful way. The harmful is, you know, if you say that, I don't care, I want to stick to interest and because the God has completely condemned the participation of interest very well, then it's your right to go out. And if you want to pay more, it's fine. However, by doing so, that you find that you are compromising on other obligations to your family, and that to me is harming, right? Yes.
So would you say in such a situation, then it would be more Islamic for you to go for the HDB?
I mean, that's a very sensitive thing to say about Islamic, but I would ask Muslims to make the right choices, you know, because if you are a part of a family, you have a responsibility. So your decision would have an impact on everyone who's depending on you.
Great. Love it. So which brings us to the next point, and that is Bitcoin halal? And we'll continue this after a word from our sponsor.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, Raj, is Bitcoin halal?
You see, it's very interesting. I remember there was once a question someone posed. Is cryptocurrency permissible? All right. And then it wasn't to me, it was to someone else. And then the response was, yeah, but you know, Bitcoin price now have crashed. Now, if you look at the question again, the question was, is cryptocurrency, which I think by now should be 10,000 of them and counting, right? Is it permissible? And the response was, Bitcoin is high volatility and it has crashed. So people's understanding of this new asset class is what's leading to confusion and the permissibility of this, whether it's halal or not. Now, cryptocurrency is an asset that's very new. And I think it's not just Muslims. Even the conventional markets are trying to understand how do they deal with this. So that's why you find very cautious steps, not just taken by Singapore, but even in the US. You know, I just read something that the US Congress or someone in there asking them to approve a cryptocurrency ETF or a Bitcoin ETF. So they're still, and it's already a decade since it has been introduced. Mm-hmm. So the question here is this permissible? No, just like stocks, you know, there are thousands and millions of them all over the world. There are also many different kinds of cryptocurrencies. There are some that are used for unhealthy entertainment, all right? And similarly, they are used for economic purpose. So the way to deal with this question, whether cryptocurrency, so not just Bitcoin per se, is to look at its application. What does each one of the coins or what are these tokens? Because what are they? Are they actually coins? Are they tokens? Are they currencies? Because people are still struggling to define them. Ripples is still involved in a lawsuit that the US is not able to define what is it. So there, it is a very, very, I would say, a fastly developing and evolving, I would say, industry and asset class. But having said that, because we are involved in it, and we have got scholars who have approved a list of coins or it's tokens as
list.
They have approved list.
Where do we find this list?
It's for a good price we can.
Oh, wow.
Wow, the merchant in use here.
I've got to make a bit of money, right? But anyway, jokes aside, I think if you do a Google, you can find them. Some of them are there. And Bitcoin, by the way, has been certified as permissible, right? So there are certain coins that has been deemed as permissible. So just like any, you know, for easy example or analogy, you got to look at just like an equity, a listed equity, right? So just because it's halal doesn't mean it's going to make you lots of money or going to make you lose lots of money, all right? So the price depends on its intrinsic value and its application. So that's where we are at the moment. So the long and short of it is, please do not discount all cryptocurrencies as non-halal. All right, there are opportunities for us to involve in tomorrow's technologies. And as they always say, do your own research. So continue to do so. There are enough literatures in the Google today or in the net for that matter for you to make that decision. Or you could call me Ed, or can I sell myself? Just kidding. But there are evidences that there are, and there are money-making opportunities, but you've got to tie that with your own risk appetite.
Okay, so how do you decide which cryptocurrency is permissible based on, you said, these two things, right? What they are used for and also the value.
I like to use the equity of the listed companies analogy because it's easy and everyone's very familiar with it. So what would you call a company as permissible? All right. So like I said, there are some industries that we don't want to advocate, right? And investing in them is a subtle form of advocating and supporting that firm.
You're putting capital to it, yes.
Exactly, right? So we don't want to do that. So for that matter, right, you know, buying into, I mean, I don't want to mention any company name, don't want to be sued, but, you know,
smart
we don't want to invest in a casino company, right? Because that would lead to gambling, and gambling obviously lead to, you know, social problems and etc. So similarly, and obviously into the banks are off because their primary income or revenue is generated through interest-based transactions. So similarly, we would look at the application of each of the coins and look at where they are applied and their use. And then that's how we look at who the owners are, what are their activities. And there are several criteria filters that we use to try and determine them as compliant. Having said that, that doesn't mean that once we have certified them as compliant, they perennially remain as compliant because the activities and applications can evolve, change.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we would relook them. So that's why there are reviews done annually to ensure that they remain compliant or otherwise.
But the very basis of cryptocurrency, you have to do cryptocurrency mining. And my understanding is that cryptocurrency mining is bad for the environment. So in that case, with the three principles that it's avoid harm to self, avoid harm to the community, and avoid harm to the environment, isn't by that definition cryptocurrency, all cryptocurrency should be haram?
Let me give you a very interesting anecdote. Some time ago, there was a company that said that drying your hands using the dryer in the, you'll find the restroom, is not good, or something to that effect. And that research was funded by a tissue paper company.
Same with the orange juice thing. Yeah, yeah.
Right? So similarly, the camp is out there. All right? So people, there are research that has shown and very convincingly argue that the mining does harm enough than what others are doing elsewhere. For example, some of the plantation companies have been condemned for burning their plantations for regrowth and etc. Mm-hmm. So it seems like there are always two camps, as to those who want to and whatnot. We, being involved in Islamic finance and certifying some of them, we did our research, and there is a compelling reason to say that the environment released by them, by and large, may not necessarily be in an alarming rate that it has made out to be.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's a bit of a liberal left kind of idea, because like, you know, they're saying like, oh, you know, China is polluting the world. It's like China polluts everything in this world. You know, of course, it's the biggest polluter, right? Like, so there's an ongoing discussion, right? But, yeah, so. But specifically on Bitcoin and in the crypto space, I think a tangent question will be: is staking then?
You know, like I said, you know, every other day you're finding a new term coming into this crypto space, and staking is one such. So what is basically staking? Staking is, just to keep it simple, is equivalent to earning a yield or an extra, if you were to, so it's equivalent to fixed deposit, all right, if you want to call that. So if you were to park some of your cryptocurrencies with what they call as LP or liquidity provider after a particular term, then they would give you a certain return. Right, I think they use the word APY, which the name, the extension of it, just, you know, I can't remember it. Anyway, they call it APY and etc. Now you got to understand, this market is not developing for Islamic finance. So when people write literatures on staking, they started using the word interest. But is it really interest in the conventional term? The answer is no. So we have gone to our scholars and they've done the analysis of staking and find that that is not equivalent to interest. But literatures are written not just for Muslims, it's for investment purposes. And for convenience sake, I think they're using the word loosely, the word interest, to describe the yield that's getting from staking. In our sense, we find that staking is permissible, but the question then here is which coin, right? Mm-hmm. So staking as an activity is, but that doesn't mean a non-halal coin you go and stake and that's permissible. Mm. So there are different moving parts in this thing. So if you were to have a particular crypto asset that is deemed as compliant or Sharia compliant or halal, then if you stake it and the return can be deemed as halal. Oh,
interesting.
Permissible.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know. Ooh, there's so much activity going on.
So many questions to ask, so and so questions. Little time.
So little time. Which brings us to the third point. Is index funds halal?
Halal!
Because this is like the big thing, right, in the market at this point in time.
Right.
A lot of people are talking about low-cost index funds, broadly diversified, you know, all that kind of stuff, right?
Sure,
so,
sure.
But in index funds, there's so many things, right?
I think the simple way to do it is not to just look at whether index funds are halal, right? Because what happened if there is a South Asian financial index fund? The financials, like I say, as an industry, is not. So we can't look at it from that way. But the quick answer to that is, if you were to do the search on Sharia compliant index funds, I'm sure you'll find them quite a bit. So those are permissible, deemed as halal by a panel of scholars. So yes, some of them are. So you got to do your search and who they are, and that information is publicly available.
So are they like shadow funds that kind of shadow like S&P 500 or, you know, are there those true. Kind of like,
yeah, well, so, sort
how
of
does
it's,
it work?
Okay, how it works is, let's take S&P since you mentioned it as an example. So if there is an S&P, say, technology fund, then there can be an S&P Sharia compliant technology fund. The difference between these two is, the scholars would do a screening. A screening is looking at certain filters. Do they tick off? There's a qualitative analysis and a quantitative analysis. Qualitative analysis looks at their activities, while quantitative looks at their financials. So if they are pronounced, or if they have got a high liability, for example, they end up paying huge amount of interest, for example. Or if they are very cash rich, and if their revenue is quite big on this interest, then they may be questionable. So there are scholars who look these screenings, apply them, and these are universally accepted screeners, right? The literature behind the screeners are very publicly available. So if you do an MSCI Sharia, for example, you can find them. Or if you don't know the word Sharia, you can use S&P Islamic or Dow Jones Islamic.
It's not halal. No, Dow Jones halal doesn't work.
I don't think they use the word halal. They use the word Islamic.
Since I'm so upside, right? Yeah, yes, please continue.
Yeah. So, you can find literatures on them publicly available.
Interesting. Yeah. So, do they perform very closely aligned with the underlying index that it's trying to emulate? Or, you know, what is the kind of historical performance of these
funds? I mean,
if I
say yes, then naturally you're going to find everyone going into Islamic, right? So every business and every company have their cyclical performances, right? There's ups and downs. However, having said that, they find that at some times that the Sharia... So it's a different space, right? So when have they outperformed? So if you look at long term, typically they have been outperforming.
Really?
Yes, indeed. But else in the short term, they may be compatible with the conventional ones.
Is it more expensive to buy Sharia?
No, they aren't. They definitely aren't. They are, because look at it, what they do. If a conventional fund manager manages 100 technology companies, right? The other guy who's given the Islamic portfolio will manage 50. So there is nothing extra on the other side to be more expensive, right? But having said that, all these charges are public information again in the prospectus, right? So the charges are not necessarily tied to whether it's halal or Sharia or non-Sharia.
Chinese people always care about cost, right?
No comment.
Actually, I wish everyone should be conscious of the cost.
Because
that impacts on your eventual.
Of course,
yeah.
Of course.
So,
and I think
so. It's a good thing. It's not something to be shy about.
Yeah. Of course, I'm proud that I care about the cost. So, in other words, you know, if our Muslim community tuning in, they want to participate in this low cost index funds movement, broadly diversified, there are options out there that they can do and perform very well, you know, and not feel like they aren't necessarily.
You see, the question about is, what is investment all about? Investment is picking a time you think the cost is low and then selling at a time you think you have had enough, right? So that's what is all investment about, right? So to going in and coming out at the right time. So if somebody has gone in and then at the peak, you refuse to think it's going to go higher, and then if it decides to come out or liquidate at a time when it's coming down, so he's just lost less. So it's very individual, and just the important thing is, you know, when you have put your money, you need to show interest, and then monitor it. But having said that, I think we are so lucky today to have so many tools, including alert functions on so many apps that can tell you when you at what price you're looking at and whatsoever. These were not possible 20 years ago. So I think investors, both young and experienced, can benefit from tons of available resources and the amazing number of applications that would help you in monitoring your investments.
Great. Taisha, any closing questions?
I think from just now, we have been talking about whether interest is halal or not. I'm wondering, because of the, you know, we have inflation. Interest, if it's tied to the inflation rate, can that be considered halal?
what is interest and why are we against it is what first we need to go through.
Yeah.
So let's not get fixated on the word interest.
Correct.
Right? So what is interest? Interest has been used in many, many other definitions. It's, in essence, it's called cost of fund, right? So if I am willing to part X dollars today for 1 year, I'm compensated for giving that right with a return. So that's what I am. So it works in both ways, right? So if I am taking money today and I'm returning it to it over a period of time, be it 10 or 20 years, then I'm compensating someone for it, right? So that, interestingly, in Islamic finance, is appreciated. Islamic finance appreciates the time essence of money, right? What we are totally against is somebody giving up money and sitting down and doing nothing economical and simply just charging interest and then charging interest on interest and whatsoever. So the whole question is not just interest and it's how somebody applies it. I mean, let me give you an example of why we are so vehement against it. There is a transfer of risk when somebody simply charges interest. And what do I mean by that? You are a great entrepreneur. You come to us. You want some money to grow your business. And you have now asked me. And what am I going to do? I'm going to disburse the money you need. And I'm going to plonk a interest rate on it. Whatever happens to you, you are now obliged to pay me the interest and the principal. If you fail today, I will be charging you a penalty that is from an interest on interest. You continue to default, I will probably send you a lawyer letter. And then you continue to do so, I'll try and force you to liquidate. And then I'll charge you for not bringing you to the court. And then at the end of the day, I will bankrupt you or force you to pay in some form. And what do I do as a bank? The bank normally makes a non-performing loan provision. So I will write off, right? So that's what happens in a conventional interest. Now, Islamic finance doesn't mean you default, my hand goes up and ask for prayers. It doesn't work that way. Huh?
I'm sorry.
Okay? I got to tell you that. Okay? Yes, because people cannot say, since you are Islamic, can you forgive me? It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because so the bank is actually a middleman who has to disperse depositors' funds and shareholders' funds and hold it responsibly. So we don't come to you only because you're a Muslim. So we'll read your business proposal, we'll study them together, and then if you are viable, we'll disperse it to you. But now we have a profit-sharing arrangement. The interest will be more of a profit-sharing. So your success is tied to my success. The more profit you make, the more the bank makes. So there is a partnership relationship, most probably on the Islamic finance side, vis-a-vis a transfer of risk attitude on the conventional side, right? So is that what is practiced today? I'm not too sure about it, but that's the essence of it.
Great. So thank you for tuning in to the very first episode of Is This
Halal?
Yes. You guys love.
I was going to say, you know, I mean, we have so much more questions, so little time, and we would love to do more episodes. So who trying to sponsor us?
Yeah, you know, sponsor. And if you love this, you know, to our Muslim community, and of course to all of you non-Muslims, you know, that's very interested to find out a little bit more about the space so that you can build a closer relationship with your friends. We hope that today you have learned a few of these different tools that are very prominent out there and recognize that, you know, there are halal options and there's a lot more nuance to these kind of ideas. With that, I hope you learned something useful today. See ya. Hey, I hope you learned something useful today and truly appreciate that you took time off to better your life with the Financial Coconut. Knowledge is that much more powerful and interesting when shared, debated and discussed. Join our community Telegram group, follow us on our socials, like, share, subscribe, share this with your friends and the people that you care about. If you have any other topics that you would love us to cover, yeah, talk to us, email us, talk to our Telegram group. I will see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, so I hope you find this episode fun and interesting. And if you're a fan of Financial Coconut and a friend of the Muslim community, just want to take an opportunity to shout out, right? So we on our team have been trying really hard to put together a Muslim or like Islamic finance podcast. Or at least a podcast in Bahasa focused on personal finance, right? So we've been trying to do something like that. To not much breakthrough, right? So it's not always easy to recruit people. It's not always easy to recruit good personalities with a great personality, like vibrant, at the same time has like decent depth and, you know, can commit and all that, right? So if you are someone like that and if you love to create a Muslim podcast together with us, preferably in Bahasa, focus on personal finance, please email to me, hello@thefinancialcoconut.com, you know, with your CV, what have you done, everything. CV, all that, walao. Now we are atas already, okay? We need CV, show me something. And then we'll see if we can build a Bahasa personal finance podcast, you know, focused on our Muslim friends and community, right? So let me know and we shall see where this brings us. Next week, we're going to continue our discussion on cash management strategies. Last week, we talked a little bit about the 7% high interest savings account. Next week, we're going to spend some time to talk a little bit about some of these other cash management strategies that are out there. You know, like all your robo-advisors, all your brokers, you know, everybody is providing some sort of a cash management strategy, right? So what are they doing? You know, what is the difference between all of them and all that, right? So we will talk a little bit more about cash management strategies in 2023. See you next week.